Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Joining me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, Kat. How are you holding up this week?
Well, I just got back from finally getting to see the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, you were just kind of like out and about all week, going from here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, I was hanging out at the Millennium Falcon, because I'm awesome.
Caw, lucky you.
Galaxy's Edge is amazing. I didn't get to build the lightsaber.
Oh, I've seen Pixel Dan build one. It looked pretty fun.
Mostly because I don't want a big hunk of metal sitting on my mantle.
But that's where you put big hunks of metal.
But the actually going in the Millennium Falcon and standing near the chess table and then doing the ride, awesome. I felt like I was in the Millennium Falcon.
That's pretty cool. I would actually, like, I'm not like a humongous Star Wars fan, but I'd still very much like to visit Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, yeah, you totally should. And it's a lot bigger than it seems.
Oh, okay, yeah, so it's like, I guess it has just like this real, it has like so much to offer by the sounds of it, just such a property that's so big, just sprawling at this point.
Yeah, it's neat, because you go from the Frontierland, which is this weird American kitsch with like the Western and the Mississippi River and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then you suddenly hear this chime,
uh-huh,
almost like you're stepping into a different world, and then you see an X-Wing.
That's really cool.
A life-size X-Wing, life-size A-Wing. And then you see this awesome kind of marketplace where people are selling, well, merch.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, finally, you emerge to see the Millennium Falcon in all of its glory. So
I like how America Frontier is right beside it. Like, the new state in America is Star Wars.
I mean, it is at this point, right?
It pretty much is. It very much is.
All right. So there's a lot happening in the RPG space right now, Nadia. A lot of it pertaining to the Nintendo Switch and elsewhere. Among other things, Witcher 3 is now out on the Switch.
Yes, it is. And I still have to play it because, as we will be talking about today, I've been busy with Trails of Cold Steel 3 in addition to Luigi's Mansion.
That's right. You've been reviewing Trails of Cold Steel 3.
Yes.
Mike reviewed Disco Elysium, which is quietly getting... Well, maybe not Game of the Year buzz, but it's pretty dang high up there.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of social media buzz. It's going to be one of those surprise hits of the year.
And Katie reviewed Little Town Hero, which is the opposite of that.
Yeah, that's sad.
Can I just say that the stupidest controversy of the year are all the people saying that Little Town Hero stole all of the resources from Pokemon Sword and Shield?
Isn't that just the funniest thing? Like, I can't imagine anything that makes it more obvious that you do not know what you're talking about when it comes to game development. It just blows my mind.
It's getting review bombed.
I know. Which is like, oh, okay, I know the game's not that good, fine, but they're obviously review bombing it because they think it killed Pokemon or the National Dex.
Not that it needs any, like, worse reviews in any case.
Yeah, it's not doing so well. It's very meh at this point.
Yeah, I think we gave it a 2 out of 5, which is, well, it's too bad. But also, yeah, a lot of Pokemon impressions came out this week.
Yeah, it's a big week for Pokemon impressions. I think these are the first real sort of serious previews that we're getting.
Yeah. Apparently, the wild area is gigantic.
Yeah, apparently it's supposed to be, here's a unit of measurement for you, quote unquote, as big as 2 areas in Breath of the Wild, which is not small by any means, but you have to remember that Breath of the Wild has differing area sizes, so I'm kind of curious to see what that means.
Sounds pretty damn big, honestly.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's perfectly fine for a Pokemon game, because when you come right down to it, I adore Breath of the Wild, but when you get to the really huge areas, like the mountainous areas, there's not a lot going on. And I'd rather have it smaller and have, like, a lot of Pokemon and cool things to find.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing all of the wild Pokemon. We've been talking about this forever, with being like, why isn't Pokemon more like Dragon Quest Monsters Joker, where the massive ecosystems and everything? Well, it sounds like we're finally getting that.
Yeah, it sounds like, from what I read of the previews, it's kind of an extension of what we got in Let's Go, which was getting to see the Pokemon on the actual world map, except some people who have previewed it have said it's even, you know, more active than that, more, you know, alive, which is, it sounds really good, because yes, I played Pokemon Joker. I can't remember which one the last one was released. It was on the DS, but I played that, and I was really impressed by how the monsters really felt like they were part of the world versus Pokemon, which not as well at that point because they were still using random encounters.
Indeed. All right. Really quickly, some quick housekeeping. If you're enjoying Acts of the Blood God, can I please invite you to go and review us over on Stitcher or iTunes? We always enjoy seeing positive reviews. It lifts our day, and it also improves visibility of the show. Also, on social media, you can follow me on Twitter at @the_catbot. Nadia's at Nadia Oxford. My DMs are open if you want to send a note, ask a question. We do a mailbag pretty much once a month at this point, so I may save up your message and read it on the show. And also, we have a newsletter. Nadia, what was the newsletter about this week?
Well, speaking of Pokemon, we learned a bit about new Gigantamax forms, and they are all regulated to Gen 1 Pokemon. We have a giant sort of long cat Meowth, a Godzilla-looking Charizard, a Mothra-looking Butterfree, and a big, chunky, fat Pikachu is back as a Gigantamax Pikachu, and he looks adorable. But some people are kind of irritated, and they have been irritated for a long time about just apparently they think Gen 1 is hogging too much of the attention. They think, oh, why isn't Game Freak paying attention to Gen 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever? And my answer to that is I feel, and this was in the newsletter, by the way, just putting that out there, I feel like these new forms, these new Galar forms that a lot of the Kanto Pokemon are being revised as, they have really fun redesigns that really match up well with the Galar region. So it's not like I'm looking at them and saying, oh, this is lazy, this is a recolor. I mean, Sirfetch'd is great. And Giant Fat Pikachu, I'm glad he's back. Long Cat Meowth, I was not expecting that. So there's a lot there to like, and I'm not exactly upset that it's all Generation 1, especially after listening to years and years and years of Gen 1 is the best, and all of a sudden nobody likes Gen 1 anymore. I'm not jiving with that, I'm sorry.
Well, they did go out and update some of the other older designs.
Yeah, like Linoon is the, which I love the original Linoon, so I'm glad to see that he's getting, he looks like a KISS member now. That's great.
Well, if you want to go read Nadia's takes and also get updates on RPG news that are coming out this week, can I recommend that you subscribe to our newsletter? You can find the subscription info on the site. Just go to the homepage, scroll down, you'll find the subscription info. So, and you can look forward to that every single Wednesday. Okay, Nadia, let's talk a little bit about Trails of Cold Steel 3.
Yes.
Earlier this year, so backstory, and maybe people who listened to our 200th episode will remember this. I showed up with a big old copy of Trails of Cold Steel, the deluxe edition, and dropped it on your desk. Or not even your desk. We were hanging out at the hotel for PAX East.
We were hanging out, yeah. And you used like this big-ass box of Trails of Cold Steel, the definitive edition, to prop up the microphone so we could actually record that day.
Yeah, because we had this crazy setup in order to try and minimize the sound and everything. And it worked out really well, actually.
It worked out great. That was one of our best episodes, I think.
Yeah, for sure. But, and then I was like, here you go, Nadia. And it was all a trick because I wanted you to be an expert in Trails of Cold Steel so we would have somebody in-house to actually review it.
Yes, and here I am. I don't know if I'd call myself an expert because there is a lot of history going on in this game. But yes, I am definitely the most competent on the staff, I think.
What? Is there a TV show that you would compare this to where just a giant new entry drops periodically? Or a movie?
I think of it more as a fantasy book series because I don't really watch a lot of television, to be honest with you. I'm sorry. I'm a loser. But yeah, it actually, the Trails series reminds me a lot of a standard, just a good basic fantasy novel series because when you get a new entry, for the most part, you're getting a continuation of the story that you got in the last quote-unquote book. And when you really think about it, and this is something I brought up in my review briefly, there are so few RPG series that let you do that. You know, Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest, even the ones that are vaguely connected to each other, you are, for the most part, starting a whole new journey with a whole new cast of characters. Whereas the Trails games, of course, they introduce new characters every game, but you are kind of supposed to know who these characters are from the previous games and what role they continue to play in this massive ongoing war that will not stop in Erebonia.
It kind of reminds me of John Wick, honestly.
I would not, like, I am going to watch John Wick at some point, but even when I do, I'm not going to just start at 2. I'm going to start, like, at 1, because I know the whole thing's supposed to be appreciated as a collective.
Yes, because they follow on directly from one on to the next.
Right. And to be fair, I really like, you know, stories that do that in games, because, like I said, they're pretty rare. I think of it more as, like, I'm a huge Dragonlance fan, like that old 80s, 90s fantasy book series. And it reminds me very much of that, where you had, like, this long saga going on for several books. So it reminds me of that.
You know, I skipped Matameo and then went back and read Redwall back in the day.
So you started with Matameo?
That's what I meant.
Okay. So you started with Matameo. That is weird. Why would you do that?
Because I was at the library, and I saw this book that looked pretty neat, and I checked it out, and I was reading it, and I did not realize that it was a follow-up to a previous book.
Well, that's fair. You know, my first Redwall book was Mossflower, and it got me interested enough in Redwall to start reading that.
Yeah, that's the prequel.
Yeah, that's the prequel, so it kind of was a little bit better than reading the sequel to Redwall and then going back to Redwall.
But those books weren't called, like, Redwall 1, Redwall 2, Redwall 3.
No. No. Whereas Trails is 1, 2, and 3 is pretty obvious. I guess Trails in the Sky is a prequel to those games.
You skipped Trails of Cold Steel, too.
I did. I didn't have time to get to it. There are summaries of what went on, and of course there's big, long profiles for every character in the game in case you missed out. And that's fine. It's great. It was informative. I actually sat there for, like, over an hour just reading what happened in Trails 2 and getting caught up. But it's not quite the same as actually going through Trails 2. So I would absolutely recommend, if you are interested in Trails 3 and you have not played the previous two, play the previous two. They've been remastered. They're easy to find. They're easy to get. They're worth your time if you're kind of into that sort of very anime-style RPG. So that would be my recommendation to you.
Yeah, it's kind of Valkyria Chronicles meets, what, Full Metal Alchemist meets few other different kind of anime tropes with the Battle Academy setting and everything.
Yeah, it's very much a combination of so many things and yet its own thing. Like, it reminds me, of course, of Persona with the school setting, but it also reminds me of Suikoden with a very political setting, and it reminds me of every JRPG that has any sort of anime tropes in it, because it has plenty of those too, but not really in a bad way. It's a fun little mishmash. I enjoyed how, like, tropey these characters are, thanks in part to, I think, has a great localization, so that helps a lot.
What was it like to jump straight from Trails of Cold Steel to Trails of Cold Steel 3?
It wasn't too bad, because Trails was still pretty fresh in my mind. I had read up on Trails 2, and I do regret not playing through Trails 2, because a lot of really interesting story twists happen, and you know, it'd just be more fun to watch them versus having to read about them. But I didn't, like, feel too lost or anything like that. I wasn't like, oh no, what's going on? I have no idea what's going on. Although occasionally characters come out of the mist and say, hi, Reen, and there's like, hey, it's you. I'm like, hey, I don't know who you are.
One of the problems I've found with these RPG series is that from game to game, they have to contend with the fact that by the end of the original game, the characters are very powerful.
Yes.
And then you have to restart that power curve, basically. Do they do anything to address that in Trails of Cold Steel 3?
I actually had someone ask me, can you carry over data from the previous games? And I did not see a prompt to do that. I'm not saying it's not possible. It might have been something I completely missed. But I do know that I have, like, the save files from Trails of Cold Steel on my PS4. And Reen pretty much started over. There's actually a sword tech he has called Gale, and is very powerful in the first game, and I had to relearn that. I don't know the excuse he gave for that, but it was something. So, yes, you are pretty much, I don't want to say you're starting over like a naked babe or anything, but you are starting over, definitely.
That's weird. I think that
it is a little weird.
I think what they should do is kind of treat it like an anime where your characters are powerful, but there are new levels of power with each game.
Yeah, that would be nice. I wonder if it's because Rin has a different role this time around. Like, he's still a war hero, but he's a kind of the professor at a bad school. So maybe he just forgets everything so quickly because his students traumatize him or something. I don't know.
So can you just, without spoiling too much, give me an idea of the main thrust of what's happening in the story?
In Trails 2, there was a civil war between the nobles and the Empire. And that's Rin was the hero of that. It all wrapped up. Rin graduated from Thor's along with his friends, and they all went their separate ways, except Rin went to go on to teach at the new branch of Thor's, which was built in a real hurry, because it turns out the royal family of Erebonia is going to the original Thor's branch. So they kind of took all the problematic students and put them in this new branch. Kind of like in my review, I compared it to, you know, that episode of The Simpsons where Principal Skinner puts all the bad kids in Utility Basement B while the superintendent visits? It's kind of like that. So, you know, eventually, like, his, like, students, of course, think he's lame at first and, like, are too much of a braggart, but they eventually warm up to him. You know how it is in anime stuff. And to put things very quickly, there's still, even though the Civil War is over, there's still a lot of political intrigue going on in the background. There's still a lot of, like, you know, war and monsters and stuff like that boiling in the background, and it's just, it all kind of surfaces as the game goes on. That's what you have to deal with.
Is this the end of a trilogy?
No, I think that there is another game. There is 4. I don't know if it's out yet in Japan, but it is going to be out soon. And 3 does end on a cliffhanger, so 4 is, I guess, might be the end of it.
So this isn't the first time that we've talked about Trails of Cold Steel on this podcast. I think if you go back maybe a year or two, you can find an interview with Jason Schreier, who is a huge booster of the Trails series. And also we've interviewed the writers or the localizers on Trails of Cold Steel in the past. But I'm curious, Nadia, like, now that you've had a whole bunch of time with this series, do you like it? And would you recommend it to the fans? Like, what's your take on it?
I do like it. I was not expecting to like it very much, especially when the first game opens up with a boob joke and it's like, oh God, here we go. But the more time I spent with the first game, the more I liked it. I was genuinely looking forward to 3. I really do want to go back and do 2 again. I will get 4 when it comes out because I generally like the characters. I like the history of the country. One thing I really like about this series, and it's so stupid, but you would think it's perfectly in line for a game called Trails of Cold Steel, I really like the trains. There's a lot of cool trains in this game. Trails of Cold Steel 3 has you going around the country on an armored train, and it's just really, really fancy inside, and it's really high-tech and cool, and I just think that's amazing. But yes, I would recommend it. I'm not going to go in there saying, oh, your mind's going to be blown. This is the next Final Fantasy. This is the next, you know, Dragon Quest. But as far as it goes for, like, a admittedly structured, good RPG, yes, I have no problem recommending it. I think it has great localization, which, again, helps a lot. Graphics are good. Battle system is still good. I find it really holds up well in Trails 3. That's probably the series' strongest point for me, at least. I find that it's still fun to fight enemies. It's still fun to find, you know, the quartz that you equip spells with. So I enjoy the character building in the game. Yeah, overall, I'd easily recommend it. Wouldn't mind talking to Schreier about it sometime. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think that it's the kind of game for somebody who just wants a really straightforward RPG epic.
It's hard to explain. It is a little bit like Persona in that you are going from month to month, week to week, not quite day-to-day, but close at times. So it's not the kind of RPG like Dragon Quest where you're out in a big open world and go wherever you want, whenever you want. It is definitely structured. But sometimes when you get overwhelmed by an RPG, that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah, that's fine. My recollection of Trails of Cold Steel was that it was actually quite structured. And
yes,
it would be going basically from chapter to chapter, where it's like, yeah, the students are meeting up for the first time and having their first adventure together. And then now they're going on a mission, and they're one group of students is on a train and another group of students is elsewhere. And also the students are getting to know one another and maybe potentially having romantic tension.
Yeah, it's very much like that. With the addition of in Trails 3, there's actually a really good sort of card game that I enjoyed playing. I can't remember the name of it, but I do know that it was built on a card game that Falcom released way back when. They never released it outside of Japan, but it's a little bit like Hearthstone, and it's a lot of fun.
Better than Triple Triad?
I haven't played enough Triple Triad to judge, so I'll hold off on that one, but I'll let you know.
Triple Triad is the GOAT.
It is. Triple Triad, from what I hear, is the GOAT. A lot of people like it, and they have good reason to, I hear.
Yeah, it's better than Hearthstone at this point.
Ouch, but you're probably right.
Yeah, it doesn't have all that political baggage attached to it.
That's true, except for the whatever's going on in CD, they always have political baggage going on.
When it comes to Trails of Cold Steel 3's romances and that kind of thing, is there a canon relationship?
I don't think so. I don't think the first one had a canon relationship. There's always everyone's always trying to get in Rain's pants, which makes it harder. And of course, you have like the prerequisite tsundere chick. In this case, her name is Yune, or I can't remember, Yune or something like that. I'm just blanking on her name. I know it's a J that's not pronounced as a J. She has pink hair.
Who's your favorite character?
I still love Rain. Rain has always been one of my favorite characters in the series. Him and there's kind of a very tall nomad guy named Gaius, who I like. He kind of has that sly smile, and they're like, oh, I know exactly what he's about. But then when you meet him, he's this very pious, gentle sort of guy who's just really nice and just not at all the kind of person I'd expected him to be. So that was a nice surprise.
So this game's basically if Harry came back and Harry Potter came back and he was a professor.
I think Rean is better than Harry. Just putting that out there.
Oh, why is that?
Harry was never one of my favorite characters. He just, I don't know, he just rants in all caps a lot.
So yeah, when it comes to the Trails of Cold Steel series, I think that if you've never played it before, perhaps it is the series that you play for the political intrigue and the stories and also the anime tropes, all of those things layered together. And, I mean, Trails of Cold Steel 2 ultimately wraps up one of the major arcs, but maybe Trails of Cold Steel 3 is kind of an epilogue, or at the very least, it carries things forward and advances the story even more. So, I don't know, after, like, three games, wouldn't you get a little... Do you feel attached to these characters?
I like them. Yeah, I like them enough. I actually had a friend of mine who was talking to me about the first game a long time ago, and then she said, oh, I'm really sorry I recommended Trails of Cold Steel to you. It's so anime tropey. It's so, you know, boring. It's so this and this and this. And I'm like, I like the series. Like, first of all, I played it because it was kind of required of me, and I didn't expect to like it, but I did. Second of all, I found myself kind of attached to the characters. I don't really want to, you know, go out there and write a ton of fanfic about them or anything, but I like them.
I think the battle system's pretty strong.
Battle system is very strong. I still enjoy it very much, and it's still... Bosses in this game are still very challenging. They can really ream you if you're not careful.
Like how so?
They can inflict status effects like mad, and they're not afraid to do it. Plus, a lot of the time, you are rarely against just one boss. You are against a boss and a bunch of minions or something like that.
I like the positional aspects of it.
Yeah, that's also an interesting mechanic to have, because some characters are long distance fighters. Guns actually play a very big role in the Trails series, and you have your characters who are, you know, melee fighters, but they have short reach. You know, characters who are melee fighters but have a little bit of a longer reach, like if they have spears. So yeah, I enjoy that aspect as well.
All right, Nadia, any parting shots on Trails of Cold Steel 3?
If you are a Trails fan, by all means, you will like it. In fact, I have seen some early reviews from Trails fans who really do like it very much. If you are not a Trails fan, if you're new to the series, I wouldn't start with it. Definitely start with 1 because it's on the shop. It's easy to find. It's easy to get. I don't remember the prices, but it's not exactly expensive. So, yeah, you could do a lot worse for a good, solid JRPG series. It's the usual story with Falcom. They just know what they do, and they do it well.
I wish I could get into the series.
You're into enough series, right? You got plenty to do.
I do. It feels like this should be totally, like, catnip for me, because it's kind of a wartime setting. It's anime, the Battle Academy, that kind of thing. Reasonably meaty battle system and all of that. But I think that the pacing in the first game in particular really, like, weighed on me.
Yeah, and I mean, the pacing is the pacing in the Trails game, so I don't think you're going to find anything really, you know, humongously new about the third one.
And you had to really get invested in the characters, and while the politics and the world building are relatively interesting, I always felt like the characters themselves weren't that particularly, you know, they were kind of just anime archetypes.
They do get kind of better about that as you go on through the game, but it does take a while. So if you're just instantly turned off by, like, ew, anime tropes, like, then I understand why you just kind of bounced.
Because, I mean, at the beginning of the series, Rin is just sort of your typical kind of bashful anime boy, right? And then there's the gal with the long hair who's kind of a mean girl. That kind of thing.
Laura. Yeah, but she's not really mean so much as she is just like kind of nobility, and she's very proper because her father is like a really distinguished swordsman.
Yeah, they introduced the conflicts between the nobility and the common folk relatively early on.
Yeah, there's like there's a conflict between the nobles, the common folk, and the empire, and that kind of goes into the civil war in the second game.
And Fire Emblem does a lot of the same things. Even though Fire Emblem also goes into anime archetypes and that kind of thing, I think it has better artists who don't fall back so much on the kind of the cliche character designs. So even though the personalities aren't that different, at least the characters are a lot of fun.
Yeah, I will say that much as I like the Trails characters, I sometimes think of, oh, this one has the pink hair and this one has the white hair, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But hey, I mean, beyond that, I think that it is a like really strong kind of cult favorite RPG. So you should go check out that series. All right, Nadia, thanks for your review. Let's continue on and keep talking about more RPGs. Don't go away. All right, we're here with our senior editor, Katie McCarthy.
Hi.
And our reviews editor, Mike Williams.
Hello, hello.
Also, Nadia is still here.
Hi, how y'all doing?
We're going to talk about a bunch of RPGs because a whole lot of them came out on the Nintendo Switch just recently. It's actually pretty ridiculous. Mike, you literally just posted an article about how the interface for Baldur's Gate and all of those games translate actually surprisingly well to the Switch.
Yeah, so for like a long time, they're called CRPGs, isometric RPGs, whatever you want to call them. All of the old Infinity Engine games and the classic Fallout and all that stuff never really made it over to consoles at all. They were just over on the PC side where they stayed, but probably over, I'd say, past like 3-4 years, developers have actually been making strides and bringing those games over. And probably the biggest one for me was Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2, but Beamdog has brought over Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, Icewind Dale, and Planescape Torment to Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. I was playing the Switch version, and it's really nice. Like, part of the problem that they used to have is they were point-and-click games, so you would move the mouse around, click on a spot, and your character would just sort of walk there, which didn't always work, and it was kind of annoying and a little bit cumbersome. Now they're controlled directly with analog stick, something that console players would be a little bit more used to. And you have to do some things, like the interface has an interesting little highlight system where if your character walks towards it, you get like a blue sheen around it. So you can just hit an A button and interact with it directly, as opposed to like choosing which interaction that you want to use. But it's a bunch of small interface tweaks like that, and then a whole bunch of user interface tweaks as in like the menu. And together it adds up to a game that plays surprisingly well on Switch, considering its age and how it originally controlled. I was impressed.
And complex menus, party-based system and everything. So, yeah, that's really good. And also Baldur's Gate 2 and Planescape Torment, two games that are on our top 25 RPG list, so you should play it. Another game that was also on our top 25 RPG list, number 3, I believe, was Witcher 3, which is also on Nintendo Switch. And I know that Nadia hasn't played it yet, boo.
I had to. There's a big-ass game out there called Trails of Cold Steel 3 I had to play.
We haven't covered it much, but Mike, did you get a chance to play it at all? Because I heard that there were some, maybe a few performance issues. You were talking about how the cutscenes are full resolution, but have, like, drop frames and that kind of thing.
So, yeah, it's really weird. So, like, the game itself, whatever dynamic resolution scheme that they have, makes it so that it stays roughly around 30 frames per second. And actually, modders have been able to mess with post-processing effects and overclock the Switch to actually get it to run at 60 frames per second. That's actually up on the site right now. But for some reason, in cutscenes, they use full resolution. I don't think it switches to dynamic resolution at all in the cutscenes. And so what you'll have is the game runs mostly smooth, but then you get to a cutscene and it kind of, like, runs fine, but then will stutter in some spots. So I guess in the cutscenes, they prize the game looking really good, so you could, like, take a screenshot or something like that. But it runs a little bit weird, but the game itself runs fine for the most part. I mean, it's probably the most impressive Switch port I've seen to date. And the folks over at Saber Interactive who helped CG Projekt Red with it, I mean, they deserve a lot of kudos, and I think we're going to see another one of these porting houses start to rise up, especially with as popular as the Switch has been.
Nadia, you have to play it now.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is absolutely on my to-do list. It has been for a very long time. But I am just, going over what Mike said, I am just so impressed by what porters are doing with Switch games. Like, it's not just Witcher 3, it's also like Dragon Quest 11S is one we've talked about a lot, because I can barely notice the difference unless you're really looking for them versus the PS4 version. So, and these file sizes are actually, like, very reasonable. Like, Dragon Quest 11S is half the size as it is on the PlayStation 4, and it has more content. That is crazy.
Yeah, Switcher is, I think, 11 gigs in total, which is pretty fantastic.
Does that include the DLC?
Yeah, that's everything.
Yeah.
Damn, it's crazy. One. And I mean, you can tell, like, most of that probably came in the form of, like, textures, and the cutscenes that aren't rendered in game were downgraded in the video style. I think it works really well, Switcher in particular, on a portable screen, and I got the feeling that they were aiming for that, because when you blow it up on a TV, I don't think it, like, I can less make that case when you blow it up on a TV.
Yeah, yeah. When I previewed the game at PAX East, they had me specifically play it handheld, whereas everything else was on TV.
I mean, that makes sense to me. It's like, you can, if you want to play on your TV, you have so many options. You could, like, play it on your PC and just, like, scan or have that as your monitor. You can, like, play it on console. But, like, if you're getting it on Switch, you're getting it because it's portable, I feel like. I feel like that's, like, that's why that seems enticing to me. Like, I can't imagine wanting to play Witcher 3 on Switch on my TV. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
No, people are getting Switcher because they have never played Witcher 3, and maybe they only own a Switch, and they're like, well, this is my opportunity to play it. So
also, it's so long, so it's like, it being portable, that makes it more likely to keep playing it in a way, because it's like, oh, I can just take it wherever I go. I'm not, like, locked to this one platform, which is great.
And I wish it had, the part of the reason that Divinity Original Sin 2 worked so well on the Switch, and that's also a fantastic port, but it's the ability to move your save game from Steam to Switch, and I really wish that Witcher had something like that. Even if it was just from GOG, because GOG is CD Projekt Red's PC platform. But some way to move your save games back and forth would be great. And that's that's sort of the future that I want. The ability to move between PC and Switch, or, you know, PC and PS4, Xbox One and Switch, whatever. Just let me move my game from platform to platform, because at the end of the day, that means I'll spend more. Like, I'll have Witcher on every platform if you let me move the game, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like, if I had a good PC, I would love to move my PS4 save to PC, but that's just not, like, a viable thing. And, like, same with Switch. Like, it'd be great to just, like, because I never finished Blood and Wine, that DLC, as much as I love Witcher 3, like, I just never...
Because it's like, so DLC, long.
It's so long. It's like a whole, like, if I want to dive back in, it's like, oh, I have to, like, relearn how to play it again. Like, I think I got probably, like, halfway in that DLC. The last mission I remember doing is, like, the weird painting one, where you, like, the guy, like, wants to paint pictures of Geralt everywhere, so you just kind of, like, mess with them. And that's, like, the last mission I remember doing in that DLC. And I just can't... I really want to play it on Switch just to see how it performs and everything. And from what I watched on Digital Foundry, it seems pretty good portably. Like, it's not a TV game by any means. But also having to play through all that content again, even though I'd probably do different decisions and I'd probably romance Triss instead of Yennefer, but I don't know. I don't know if I can do all that again.
I'm not. That game is too damn long.
It's too long. Yeah, I love it to death, and I'd love to revisit it, but I just can't. Like, it's the same thing with Red Dead Redemption 2, which I've also been wanting to go back into to, like, get really committed to the camp stuff like I didn't do on my first playthrough, but also, that game's too long. I don't think I could do it.
Well, yeah. It goes without saying that if you play Witcher 3, you should play it on, like, Xbox One X or PS4 Pro or PC. Maybe if you have the option, because this is a game that is meant, it's beautiful. Mm. It is meant to be enjoyed from that aspect as much as it really enhances the storytelling, actually. And while the Switch is a good option if you don't have anything else, and portability is certainly a thing if you're, like, really into that, I feel like this is a little bit like watching a movie, and maybe settle into a really nice comfy chair with the biggest TV that you can muster, and just really enjoy this feast of an RPG. Okay. So, continuing onward, Katie, onto an RPG that wasn't as good, unfortunately. Katie, you shotgunned Little Town Hero, because for whatever reason, Game Freak seemed to have been doing their own PR on this. Nintendo wasn't doing the PR for Little Town Hero. It was actually hard to source a review code. It was, like, all over the place. As to who actually got one. But we finally did get one, and you played it, and it was real bad.
Yeah, it's not great. I'm gonna be honest. Like, it's just not a good game. And it's sad because it's very charming. It has amazing art direction. It, like, reminded me of Ni No Kuni in, like, this, like, sweet, cute little ways. It just seemed really cool. But it's just, like, a very strange RPG. So it's from the director behind Pocket Card Jockey, which is a great game.
That's, yeah,
like,
it was fantastic.
That's probably Game Freak's best non-Pokemon game easily.
Game of the decade.
Yeah.
Like, I agree.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, just like Pocket Card Jockey is, like, really inventive, really weird. It has, like, a cool card-based combat system. Or not combat, but, you know, like, a card-based system. Little Town Hero also has a card-based system that's just too convoluted and too hard to wrap your head around. So basically the central premise is you're this kid named Axe, or you can name him whatever you want, but I just stuck with the default name. And Axe is a kid who finds a stone, and suddenly he can fight monsters that are attacking the small town. And literally this tiny town is the only environment in this game. And it's not big at all, but there's fast travel for some reason, even though you don't need it because it takes like 30 seconds to run anywhere on the map. But I was utilizing that fast travel a lot just because I wasn't enjoying my time with it. I was just trying to get through as fast as possible. So the combat system is super, super confusing at first, and it took me a long time to get a handle of. So basically, you have three hearts as your life, and then you have, like, a deck of ideas, which are basically your cards. But what you get per round or per turn is random. Like, you don't know. You can't, like, plan, like, okay, this is, like, my default deck or whatever. You have no control over that. So you have these random things, and then it costs action points to activate them and be able to use them in battle. But you, at the start of each match, you only have three action points. So there's a lot of, sometimes you'll, like, go into a turn and you only have like one action point cards that are supposed to boost your other cards you've activated, or you have like 4 point cards that you can't even use because you don't have enough action points because you have not been in the battle long enough to get more action points, which every three turns you get like, oh, you have like another action point you can use on your turns. So every battle just lasts so, so long because you're waiting to get to the max like 6 point action points you can use for your turns, and you cannot skip or stall your turn. So when you're in those like no win situations where, oh, I only have cards that are useless to me or cards that I cannot afford, then you just have to do a struggle move, which basically you get body damage, which is your three hearts. And when you lose all three hearts, the match is over and you lose and you have to restart it. So you basically just have to sacrifice yourself and just like try and restart the battle to hope you get a better roll of the dice, I guess. And then when you get into boss fights, it gets even more complicated because now you have like a whole board game thing. So like at the end of every turn, you move, you like roll dice. It's like 1 to 4 spaces you move. And then you move across like this like board game, kind of like Mario Party style. And then some places there'll be like a support character that offers like curry to help you mix cards together. Or maybe there's a cannon that if you use one specific move, it will like inflict damage to hurt the boss. But like every other character, this boss has like a bunch of shields on, so you have to knock down the shields, and then you have to get to the heart to knock them out. So every battle takes like 1 to 2 hours long, because it's just so long to do anything, and it's just it's such a frustrating game. It's so just, I think just how long the battles take was just really grinding and not in like a fun, I'm being really strategic way. It's just a this sucks so much kind of way.
Yeah, this is a thing that I've seen on more than one RPG. Cosmic Star Heroine is another one where it's not as bad for sure, but when regular encounters take way too long to complete, it starts to get pretty exhausting and boring.
Can I just say that I feel like in this age, 2019, Year of Our Lord, if you're going to have a card-based RPG... Like, we already have Slay the Spire, so that is your bar. Please try to meet it.
Slay the Spire is, like, it sets a really high bar, and it's a somewhat different game, also.
Yeah.
And I feel like just card battling in general should live up to, you know, at least part of that, like, try to reach that standard. You don't have to necessarily reach, like, right there, but try. Give it your all.
I was going to say, like, the weird thing about this game is... There are no, like, random encounters. There's no, like, place you can run around just to, like, you know, practice or, like, try and level up. Because there's no progression in, like, the traditional leveling up or, like, sense. Or there's no items you can get to, like, heal yourself. It's all in the story, which is bizarre to me. Because sometimes, like, I just want to go run around and practice and try and get better at this combat. But it's only in the story. And, like, the thing is, this combat system's really interesting on the surface. Like, you can see where it could work, but they just keep adding system on top of system on top of it. Like, the whole, like, heart system to actually inflict damage and end the battle is stupid. It should be when I wipe out their deck of cards. I don't understand why they're adding this whole other layer on top of it that just takes forever to get to. Because you can't even damage unless you have, like, this certain card type activated when you do your final move, but if you use that card on the final move, it doesn't count because you just like expense that card. So it's just so, there's just so much going wrong.
When I was editing this review, I said to Katie, I was like, wow, this must be really complex because like I don't get a clear picture of the game's combat from what you're saying in this review. And she's like, I tried my best. And even now, just like explaining it here on the podcast is just kind of like, what?
Yeah, it's really baffling. It's like a weird ass system. Like I almost in my review I was gonna do like a screenshot breakdown where I like wrote like on Photoshop, just like drew circles around shit to explain everything, because there's just so much going on the screen. Like looking at a screenshot, there's just like so many meters and so many numbers, and it's just hard to break down. It's a weird game, and it's unfortunately also very tedious and boring.
Well, this is Game Freak being, I want to say, experimental. Like, this is their time to... I think they've said previously that they use these games to try out new concepts and basically see if they can come up with another, maybe another franchise that can go right alongside Pokemon. Maybe Little Town Hero was never going to be that game. It felt like a proof of concept in some ways.
Mm.
So, and then as we were already discussing earlier, there's the extremely stupid narrative that Little Town Hero was somehow stealing resources from Pokemon, which isn't really how it works.
Yeah.
I don't understand. People were saying, like, oh, they moved the A team to Little Town Hero, and that's where all the resources went. And, like, there is no fucking evidence for that. Like, none whatsoever. Like, literally, it's the Pocket Card Jockey director, so you know it's that B team. Like, what? People are crazy. I don't get that narrative at all.
They really are.
Well,
they just are.
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like a great game. Probably not recommended from the Blood God.
Not recommended.
Yeah.
That's really a shame, because I always like to try to support Game Freak, because I know they want to be more than just Pokemon. And Pocket Card Jockey again demonstrates they can do really good, fun, unusual things. But unfortunately, this isn't one of them.
Yeah, it's a shame. And it, like, at its best moments, it kind of reminded me of Thronebreaker, which was CD Projekt Red's interesting Gwent RPG they put out last year, because it had like a similar weird structure, weird puzzle type encounters too with cards. And I think like that's where Little Town Hero is kind of at its best, but it's like so few and far between. It's like two times maybe in the campaign where it's like, oh, this is kind of cool. And it's just unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a real shame, because I really want more card-based games. Like, yeah. SteamWorld Quest was a good idea. It just needed a little bit more, and then this is really disappointing, and I just... Bring back Phantom Dust, damn you, Microsoft.
Play Slay the Spire. All right, an RPG that we can recommend, and Mike reviewed it. Katie, you've been playing it as well. I got it on my computer. I need to play it, but I've got a certain really big review to play, which is Death Stranding, which, but, okay, guys, proceed to gush about Disco Elysium. Go forth.
Do you want to start first, or should I go, Katie?
You're the one that reviewed it. I'm the one. Yeah. I'm in the opening hours. I've played probably like 5 hours so far. I'm like in the baby steps.
Yeah, so Disco Elysium, I said in the review, it reminds me a lot of Planescape Torment in that you wake up with no memory of who you are, and part of the game is sort of filling out not only the backstory of the world and of your character, but also sort of forging the type of character that you are. And the way it stands out is sort of by making all of your skills almost their own specific characters. So, like, let's put it this way. Like, there's a skill called Inland Empire, which is essentially your imagination. It denotes your imagination. And as you'll be talking to somebody in a normal conversation, Inland Empire will pop into the conversation and offer up its own take on what's happening. So every conversation in the game is a dialogue between your main character, the people outside of them, the NPCs, and his own sort of inner monologue. And it sounds confusing, but it's actually works out to be really fantastic. You have a total of 24 different skills across your character. And the ones that are most prominent are based on your stat build. It's like Motorix, which is your physical stuff, intelligence, I forget the other one, like charisma, and there's another one. But how you build your character there determines which skills are pushed to the forefront, which ones interject in your conversations and in your life. And I mean, it has the normal skill checks. You know, if your charisma's high, you can convince people to do stuff. If your logic is high, you'll sort of pick out different bits of the background, or you can puzzle through certain situations. But all the skills are interesting, and they each are their own tiny character. And it just adds this real interesting narrative when you put everything together. I've never quite seen a game, an RPG like it.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just in the opening hours, like I said before, but it's interesting, like, even his clothes both enter the conversation. Like, in the beginning, like, Mike, I think you mentioned this in your review, like, you can find his tie hanging on his ceiling fan. Like, and that's, like, one of the first things you can do when you wake up. But you can totally miss that and just not wear tie. But if you get that tie, like, I got the tie, and the tie is constantly nagging me. Like, every decision I'm making, and the tie is just saying, like, oh, you should, like, you know, lick that alcohol bottle. Like, just do it. Like, you want to do it. And, like, trying to get him to fall back into, like, his quote-unquote, like, old ways, because he kind of, like, woke up from a drunken binge, and he doesn't remember his name, he doesn't remember anything, which is kind of the perfect, I guess, platform for role-playing, because you're kind of making this character how you want him to be.
Yeah, and then it has, like, some other interesting, like, smaller systems. So, like, there's a health and morale system, and there's no necessarily combat. Like, there will be violent encounters that you can have, and you can lose health from those encounters. But more interesting is the morale, which is certain things that will happen. Like, early on, I had a conversation with this girl, and I chose a self-deprecating quote, and it hit my morale. Like, my morale dropped by 2 points.
I also love when that ping drops into it. It's like, oh, your morale went down. I'm like, what? Like, so sad. Like, damn it, I made my guy sad.
Yeah. And
you made yourself sad.
And if your morale drops to zero, your guy just gives up. Like, yeah, that's still the end of the game for you. But instead of dying, he just gives up. He drops into a funk, and then the game is over. But the ways that your morale can drop are, like, really interesting. Like, there's a poster related to, like, communism. And if you read the poster is, like only you can, like, it basically focuses the good outcome on you. And if you don't have the sort of right skill to blunt it, there are skills that will be like, no, that's stupid. That can lower your morale too. So, like, they're really interesting ways that they mess with health and morale. And then there's also the thought system, where sometimes you'll come across an idea, and then you can sort of equip that idea and make it a part of yourself and make it a part of your composition as a person. Again, another early on one is, I had a random thought, like, oh, I'm a superstar. And that became a thought that you can then equip to yourself. And then it sort of becomes a part of your character's personality. So I thought I was a superstar cop, which made me sort of an asshole diva. But there's a whole bunch of different thoughts like that that change how your character grows and changes and responds to different things over the course of the game. It's a really interesting RPG overall, like, that does things that when you look at them on the surface, you're like, oh, that's pretty simple extrapolation of this, but I can't think of any other RPGs that have tried it.
Apparently it's an RPG that hates centrism.
Oh yeah.
It's definitely almost in that South Park kind of thing, where I feel like it hates everything.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. It's definitely, like, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think something that really elevates all these, like, weird systems and, like, all your thoughts talking to you and your clothes talking to you while also talking to NPCs and everything is I feel like the dialogue is all really well written, at least so far in my experience. Like, there's this one scene early on where you go to a cop car thing and radio your station because you're a cop from out of town, and you need to report your badge stolen. And then it's just like this dialogue with all the NPCs on the other side, like your coworkers at the station, who are just totally railing into you for losing your badge. And it's just, like, a funny, like, back and forth of, like, hey, like, Dick Mullen, like, lost his badge. Can you believe it? And then it's just, like, a bunch of people, like, piggybacking off it and just totally roasting him. But it's, like, all comes across in, like, a really natural way. Like, it's just, like, all the bouncing off, and it just seems like really, like, oh, this is definitely something that would happen. And all the dialogue kind of comes in, or comes across as feeling very genuine to this world, almost. Like, there's a few conversations that just kind of go off the rails in weird ways, but it's all, like, really well written. Which leads to another point, which makes it a shame that the voice acting is kind of all over the place. Like, sometimes it's, the sound mixing is really weird. Like, there's another part early on where it's just very loud and it, like, blew out my headphones. And I was like, ah, like, that was too loud. And then some recordings just don't sound as crisp as others. And some of the voice acting is just, like, frankly not that good. So it's kind of a bummer that it's a little mixed in that department, because so much of it does lean on dialogue. But so it kind of makes me wish, like, I could just turn off voice acting, which maybe I can't even look, actually, to just play it with just reading, because the voice acting is just not consistent enough for my taste.
Yeah, the voice acting definitely has that call up your friends on Skype and get them to record the lines.
Yeah, it's definitely not great sometimes. I mean, there are, like, definitely characters that are good. Like, I think Kim's pretty good voice acting, and there's, like, a few other characters you come across that seem solid, but I don't know. It's definitely, like, a bit of, they put up, like, a ad and just let anyone come into the studio for it type thing.
What do you guys think of the combat? Because it doesn't really seem like much of a combat-focused RPG.
It doesn't necessarily, like, yeah, I said, it doesn't have combat per se. Like, there will be encounters that you will have that may end up in someone getting, like, punched or someone getting shot, but there isn't like a, you explore and you talk to people and then over here you're fighting. It's just, oh, you're talking to a person and now this encounter is violent.
Yeah, like, I got, like, the first time I died was, there's this guy who just, like, I was not getting through to him, because my character is very, like, he has, like, high charisma or whatever it's called. I know there's the name for it. It's not charisma, but I have, like, the high charisma, like, thing. I think I maxed that out. I have, like, medium logic, so I'm, like, pretty smart, but I'm also very weak, and, like, I have bad motor skills, so I'm kind of, like, playing with that in mind, and I was trying to, like, sweet talk this guy into, like, letting him move past so I can, like, push his button or whatever to open a door, and he just was not having it, so it just, like, resulted in, like, okay, I'm just gonna punch him, I'm just gonna see, like, if this will do it. And then he just, like, literally just grabbed me and I died, like, instantly because he was so strong. So, but it, luckily the save, like, put me right before that conversation. So I was like, well, I'm just not going to do that this time.
Yeah. And then I was talking to a little girl and trying to explain how I lost my morale. The first skill I think is, like, intelligence, and I didn't have that high. So my logic is pretty low. And so I was explaining to the girl that I was a detective, and then at that point I was supposed to detect something about her, but my logic skill was so low that I, like, looked at her and then I was just like, yeah, I got nothing. And that's how my morale dropped.
Couldn't explain self to little girl.
Right.
Seems like a really clever RPG, all things considered, that it really strays off the beaten path in the way that it presents quest design and character interactions and that kind of thing. I really like the notion of constantly having to deal with your own intrusive thoughts.
It's a lot of fun. And as I said in the review, like, as you get used to them and you play more to the game, each of the thoughts has sort of its own personality, like its way of talking. Like I pointed out in the review, drama was one of my higher skills on the second playthrough. And drama talks like a washed-up actor. Like, it has that definite vibe. So I feel like when they were crafting each of these skill dialogues, they were like, so what does endurance sound like? What does perception sound like? Or, like, suggestion. Like, what would they sound like if they were actual characters? And as you play more of the game, you sort of get that feeling of them.
It seems like this game maybe could tell you some things about yourself that you don't want to know in terms of how you find yourself role-playing through the game. And then it'll judge you for it.
Yeah, no, it definitely will.
Oh yeah, I'm just having like a lot of fun with it. It's just really unique. I love the art design of it. It just has like a very cool look. Like, I feel like a lot of CRPGs have, they're all in like fantasy or like super sci-fi type environments, and it's cool to see just like a detective thing in this weird sort of sci-fi. Like, there's definitely like sci-fi elements in it, but it doesn't feel like knocking over the head. Like, this is like about space, you know? It's just like a very unique world, very grimy, but it has like this cool like noir type tone because detective stuff, and it's just like very cool. It's just very well written, and it's kind of the perfect RPG for right now.
Do we know if it's coming out on console?
I don't think they've said anything about it, but I also feel like if this is a big hit, probably. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, you know? Like, Divinity, I don't think was, like, at the jump. They were like, I don't think they said, we're doing consoles too. I think because Divinity Original Sin 2 was such a big hit, eventually came to console type thing. So I can see that being the case here.
Yeah, they haven't said anything, and they're a smaller studio, so it might, depending on how much they have, but, like, even in terms of releases, like, I think it's just a Steam release. Like, they didn't even have, I guess, enough resources to do other platforms on PC. So maybe it'll come to Switch one day, but I would expect that would be like a down the road kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's getting a lot of positive word of mouth, but I wonder if it's going to actually become a breakout hit just because it's such a... It's not a power fantasy per se. It's very experimental. I want to say, is all about, it has a very strong storytelling aspect to it. Maybe not as much, there is customization, as it were, and like very strong role playing, but maybe not as immediately like jump out standard appealing as a game like Divinity Original Sin, as it were.
Yeah, it's kind of off the beaten path. I could see some people falling off of it because it's not 100% standard fantasy or like super sci-fi. But I really enjoy it, and it's the kind of thing that I hope other developers who make RPGs get a chance to play and start to sort of bring some of that stuff over to maybe games with more larger budget that are pretty traditional, you know, working on the CRPG like genre or foundation.
Either way, I'm always down for games that experiment a lot with how role-playing works and everything, so that is a lot of fun. Mike, what did you end up giving Disco Elysium on the site?
4.5 out of 5. It's a great game.
Very good, very good. Well, I'm sure it'll probably be finding its way onto our top 20 list at the end of the year, but okay. Thanks to Katie and Mike for coming on and talking about all of the various RPGs. It's hard to talk about all of them in a ton of depth just because of how many there are at the moment, but suffice it to say, no matter what system you own right now, I think you're doing okay. From the RPG
you'll find
standpoint,
something.
You're going to find something, whether it's Ni No Kuni or Dragon Quest or Disco Elysium or the Baldur's Gate games and everything. Like, they're all out there. They fit every taste, and that's great.
Yeah, they all want to be your friend.
All right, guys. Thanks so much, and let's move on to a couple of quick mailbag questions. All right, thanks to Mike and Katie for coming on to talk about all the various RPGs that have been coming out on PC and PS4 and Nintendo Switch and whatnot. Let's quickly do some mailbag questions. Last week, we did a mailbag.
We certainly did.
Which we talked about a lot of different things, including the legacy of Final Fantasy XIII and what RPG you should start with first. And also difficulty in games, which is a thing. Drachmalius said, glad to hear Blood God weigh in on the difficulty discourse. I love hard games and tend to play a lot of games on normal or hard mode. Also love Sekiro and the Souls games. That doesn't mean I'm going to dictate how other people play. That's just ludicrous. Every time this conversation starts again, some folks try to force their experience down everyone's throat. Just let everyone else choose how they want to play a game. I promise it won't make your experience worse. I think, so I got to play Jedi Fallen Order earlier this week. I really enjoyed it. You can go find my impressions on the site, including gameplay video and all that. And the thing that stood out to me about Jedi Fallen Order was that it was basically the Sekiro difficulty debate, but it's, look, you can play it on very accessible, or you can play it on Grandmaster difficulty with like really hardcore parry windows and everything. Just pick whatever. Go for it.
Yeah. The Trails games give you the choice between five difficulty settings. Like, if you want to just kind of play and enjoy the story, great, it's there. If you want to be punished until the ends of the earth, it's there. It's, options are good.
Sammy J9 wants to defend Final Fantasy 13. Gasp.
Oh, yeah, there's one in every crowd. Good for you, Sammy.
I mostly agree with you that the characters are generally bland and the plot isn't good. We're not off to a good start here. Hell, it even requires you to read the in-game lore menus to even have a chance of understanding what's going on. But I actually really like the battle system. Treat it more like you're a manager rather than actually controlling your party as they fight. Basically giving orders for the situations you're given. I really like the game once you get to Pulse and it's more open. The problem is that the good parts of the game are buried in the last 25%, and you don't even really get a chance to team build and use the battle system to its full potential until you're nearly done with the game. Overall, it's very mediocre, but I still like it for the battles and the environments of Pulse, and the music is very good.
Yeah, I have listened to the soundtrack for 13, and it is excellent, but the rest of it's kind of eh?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I've shared my thoughts on Final Fantasy 13. Go listen to the previous article. I rip into it pretty hard.
Yeah, you did.
So yeah, FTL Mantis says, I think there's basically no situation in which I buy a next generation console at launch. This generation has been a massively disappointing, and I see no reason to believe the next one won't be. Really? It's been massively disappointing?
Oh, I feel the opposite, but everyone has their own feelings, I suppose. I just feel like we've never had so many options. Like, God, you PC, PlayStation 4, and Switch are all just shining right now.
I think it's been a way better generation than last generation. I thought last generation sucked.
Yeah, last generation I feel was like just so kind of hopeless. Like, the PlayStation 3 took so long to take off. Xbox 360 has some good stuff, but it just kind of really narrowed down what I liked about video games. Like, the JRPG scene, as we know, was a little bit dead.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting last gen to be getting indies. You know, that kind of thing. But Nintendo was full on in, I want to say, a bit of a funk at that time.
Yeah.
Like, there were some good games coming out of it, but it was kind of a bad time. And it was a bad time for Japanese games in general.
It was, in general, yeah. Like, I've heard that Japanese developers had a hard time getting a handle on HD.
Yeah, so I mean, it was a whole mess of factors that I've touched on before. But So Japanese developers were having a hard time, and it felt like a lot of console developers were so cynical in the way that they presented games, and there was a real dude bro aspect to so many of the blockbuster games at that time. Obviously, yeah, there were also really good games that were coming out at that time, but I honestly think that a lot of the games that came out this generation, like Witcher 3, were better, so.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of the best generations we've had in a very long time, yeah, so to each their own. I'm sure people have their own reasons for not liking this particular generation, but I just feel like, compared to last year, it's looking so much brighter for the industry. Don't forget, also, last generation is also when mobile seemed poised to take everything over. And in many cases, you did have a lot of Japanese developers jumping ship over to mobile, making middling to poor games, and, you know, a lot of them have... They still, even if they still make mobile, they've gone back to consoles as well. That for a long time, it just seemed like all these, like, really, not just Japanese developers, but popular, famous developers in general were making games for not just mobile, but Facebook. It was just weird.
I do think that at the top end, like blockbuster, like, there's way too many service games, as it were. Like, I'm like pretty sick of those. Like, I think we've really hit saturation there. But
that's true. I agree.
We were just talking about Disco Elysium and that kind of thing. It really feels like in this generation, there is a something for every taste. Like,
there is.
If you have a particular thing that you love in games, like maybe you like strategy games with spaceships, you're going to find it somewhere. right?
Mm-hmm.
If you you love a freaking, if you love hardcore indie games, walking simulators, you're going to find that. If you're going to find, if you want RPGs, you, a hardcore, super in-depth, isometric RPGs, you're going to get that with stuff like Divinity Original Sin. If you want a freaking goose game, you got a freaking goose game.
You can be an asshole goose, people. What more do you want out of video games?
I don't know. Like, it's truly a best of times, worst of times kind of situation because the fire hose of games is overwhelming. It's really hard for developers to continue to be viable. We've seen the decline of some really like strong developers, favorites from previous generations like BioWare. But at the same time, we've seen new ones rise up like Larian and CD Projekt. So I don't know. Like I can't really call this generation bad, but okay.
No, I definitely don't think so.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. As always, Axe of the Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. Please leave us a review, subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on social media. If you enjoyed Mike and Katie, Mike is at Automatic Zen. Katie is at You May Katie. That's YUMECATY. And I am at the _ Catbot. And Nadia is at Nadia Oxford. Lots of cool coverage on the site as usual. Nadia has been covering Luigi's Mansion. I have been covering Jedi Fallen Order, the reviews of games like Disco Elysium and all of that jazz. And also, there was a cool story from Eric just today about how a rookie speedrunner slashed Dragon Age Inquisition's world record to pieces. Yeah, and like they beat it really fast, like in less than an hour.
Oh, geez.
Which is like just completely ridiculous. So go read that story. Okay, thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week. And until then, I've been Cat Bailey. And for Nadia and myself, happy adventuring.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.